Welcome to their classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, the mighty 101.5. Hello, I'm Jim Samaria.
Hello, Jim.
Hello, Mark.
And I'm Mark Plotnick. Each week, Jim and I bring you music backstories and interviews from the most prolific era for rock and roll music, the 1950s through the early 1980s.
Mark and I are authors of the book Classic Rock, Photographs from Yesterday and Today, which is available on Amazon and also at Black Circle Records up in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. The book features my photography of classic rock artists from 1973 to present day with words by the man, the myth, Mr. Mark Plotnick.
More the myth, Jim.
Yes.
Today we are very happy to have as our guest rock and roll journalist, author Lisa Torum. She's interviewed many of her music heroes, published hundreds of live interviews, and contributes rock-based literature reviews for the UK-based website Petty Black Music.
Lisa co-authored Jim Peterick's 2014 biography, Through the Eye of the Tiger, and recently completed On Track, Tori Amos, a study of the singer's, composer's recording history. It will be available in November in the UK and in the US shortly thereafter, and at leading bookstores and online.
And if that wasn't enough, Lisa's also working on a memoir project with singer Ava Cherry to be released in early 2022. And she is working on a book that celebrates Billy Joel's extensive discography.
And in her spare time, she comes and does radio interviews with us. So, Lisa, welcome to our show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Hey, you've been busy, a lot going on. Tell us how you got started writing about rock and roll.
Well, I heard that the Pete Best Band, and that Pete Best was Ringo Starr's, the drummer before Ringo Starr and the Beatles, that the Pete Best Band was coming to the Heartland Cafe in Chicago. And I went and wrote a little article about it. And then I said, well, what am I going to do with the article? I didn't know how to get it published. I just started randomly calling outlets. And then I ended up talking to an editor at a local neighborhood paper, and he hired me as a reporter. So I started doing Cubs games and things like that. But as I did that, I also wrote some feature articles about local musicians and started collecting clips. And one day I ended up getting the attention of a British British editor at Penny Black Music in the UK, and I started doing a lot of articles, plus some articles for local outlets, and that's how it started.
What year was that about, approximately?
About 1992.
Oh, so a long time.
Yeah, long time.
So when you were 15, you started?
Something like that. Okay. They were carding me.
They're carding you. Well, I want to go to the beginning of our friendship. Mm-hmm. Lisa and I met in 2009 at a Johnny Winter concert. I was photographing Johnny for his manager, Paul Nelson, and Lisa was writing for Penny Black Music. So our professional friendship developed, and we were soon doing stories together about Robert Plant, which was really exciting, mm-hmm. Ronnie Montrose, Joe Bonamassa, and so many more. And it was kismet that we met there, I believe, because it rekindled me to photograph rock and roll artists again, which I went at full volume after that. And with your help, I really got a good start, so I just want to thank you publicly. So thank you for helping me get back into rock and roll photography.
Well, thank you, Jim, publicly, and you made my articles look great.
Well, thank you. Anyway, I'm a blush here now. In honor of our meeting each other, the first song we're going to play is Johnny's version of the Jimi Hendrix classic, Red House. Why don't you tell me a little bit about Johnny's version?
So Johnny just did a real mind-blowing version, based on Jimi Hendrix classic. Just wonderful chops. And I have a little story about that. We had a little girl at that time who just would, she was an insomniac. And we were always trying to get her to sleep. So one day, my husband and I rode around in our little minivan, and we started driving around listening to Red House. And lo and behold, she fell asleep. And we'd go to Dunkin' Donuts and get a coffee. But this turned out to be our ritual for at least several weeks. It's the only song that put this little baby to sleep.
Well, she must turn out really cool kid.
Definitely.
Growing up on Red House is pretty cool.
And so, everyone, hold on to your seats, because here's Johnny Winter ripping it on a live version of Jimi Hendrix's Red House off Johnny's Bootleg Series, Volume 2. Yeah.
That was the great Johnny Winter playing his version of Red House. So, Lisa, how do you get someone to open up during an interview?
Well, can you guys keep a secret?
Sure. We won't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, one thing that I like to do is get very acquainted with the way that person speaks. You know, some people, it could be regional. Like they may pause a lot when they answer a question. They might speak very quickly. They might have a dialect, might have an accent. I like to be really familiar with that person's voice, if I can, prior to having that interview. I also want to let the artist know very early on that I've done my homework, that I know the people in their group, that I know their producers, their likes and dislikes. And I try to come up with some empathetic questions that show that I respect the era that they come from and that I know their story and that I want to know as much more as I can.
That's great information from young up-and-coming reporters out there. So tell us a little bit about your Jim Peterick project and how it came about.
Well, I had met Jim at a songwriter's workshop years earlier, and when I started doing a lot of interviews, he was on my A-list. I called up and asked for a phoner, and he very graciously invited me to come to his recording studio, which I believe is called Lennon's Den, and Jim's wearing a great John Lennon shirt. And so we had quite a long interview that day. We ended up doing ultimately about 50 interviews to start. But prior to that, we had kept in touch, and he said, "Well, I'm thinking of doing my memoir. Do you know anyone who might be interested?" I'm like, me, yeah. And then we started working on it.
What color was his hair?
Oh, brassy red.
Oh, okay.
Or purple.
There
sorry,
you go.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah, he's got purple hair right now.
Right now, yeah. Well, all right, that's great. Let's play the Ides of March tune from 1971, L.A. Goodbye.
Oh, well, my wavelength gets a little longer every time I wave goodbye. Sentimental breakdown, you know I break down in lie. Where I'm not supposed to lie, my head always seen my softest pillow. And as I board my plane, something inside my brain needs to wave LA goodbye. Trip and I feel trip over to your highway.
That is my favorite Ides of March song, L.A. Goodbye, from 1971. You are listening to that classic rock show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRU-LP 101.5 FM, and 24/7 on demand from anywhere in the world, including Berwyn, Illinois, which is where Jim Peterik is from.
Berwyn.
And Lisa, your next book is due for release in November, all about Tori Amos. Tell us a little bit about your history with her.
Well, it starts out a little sad, but things get chirpier. So I wanted desperately to see Tori when she came to Park West. I think that was 93. She had been at Shuba's. It was sold out, and I couldn't get into the show. And I had a babysitter, so I was really excited because all I needed was a ticket. I got there at Park West about 3 or 4 o'clock, and I had my two little girls with me, and we had they were getting whiny. I got them some Ben and Jerry's ice cream. It was a hot day. We all looked like a mess. We just looked like a mess. And I went in, and they were sold out. No way I could get a ticket. I just sat there waiting for some miracle, and I was going to leave after the ice cream. And all of a sudden, this beautiful woman hops out of a cab. She's wearing these black high-top sneakers. And she's like, "Why do you look so sad?" And I literally did not even look up. She says, "Come with me." And she takes me into the ticket booth. And I said, "I really wanted tickets for tonight. I have a babysitter and everything." She got me two tickets for that night, right behind the piano. And I was in heaven. Thank you, Tori. I've never thanked you. Tori.
Tori, if you're listening, she really thanks you. So tell us about the song Cornflake Girl.
Okay, so Cornflake Girl has sort of this reggae beat. There's some great rock and roll history here because you remember Mary Clayton who did Gimme Shelter, right?
Right.
So you'll hear her in this bridge part where it's the man with the golden gun part. And the thing about Tori is that it was sort of like a throwback to the girls that weren't, there were the cool girls that were the Raisin Girls, and there were the Cornflake Girls that were sort of the snooty girls. So that's kind of how the song started. There's all sorts of other backstories, which I'll let you guys Google. And there were two videos, a U.S. and a U.K. version, which you guys should also check out. It's from her Under the Pink album, and you will love this song.
So from 1994 is Tori Amos doing Cornflake Girl.
It was a good solution, hanging with the Raisin Girls. She's gone to the other side, giving us a yo-yo. Things are getting kind of gross, and I go at sleepy time. This is not really, this is not really happening. You bet your life it is. Would just peel out the watchword. She knows what's going on. Seems we got a cheaper feel now. All the sweet tears are gone. Gone to the other side with my hands like a baby. Must have paid her a nice price. She's putting on a stupid love. This is not really, this is not really happening. You bet your life it is. You bet your life it is. Honey, you bet your life. It's a peel out the watchword. Just peel out the watchword. Never was a cornflake girl. Thought it was a good solution. Mm-hmm.
Well, that song gave me the chills. That is one gifted artist.
Yeah, it was a very good song. Yeah. I like it, especially the message.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, Jim tells me that you met Sir Paul McCartney.
And he met me.
Wow.
We were sort of in, I guess, the green room before he went on stage in St. Louis. He was wearing this very classy conservative jacket. I bought him a pair of red suspenders, but I don't know if he put them on or not. I don't know who was more. He was actually very nervous. I never would have guessed that Paul McCartney would ever be nervous, but he looked super nervous. And I was a wreck. And I was with one of my daughters. She's like, Mom, just like act normal, please. Because I was sort of a babbling mess.
Did he mention me, by the way?
Many times.
Did he? Okay, good. Because, yeah. You know, Paul and I go way back, you know. Because I actually replaced Pete Best, but then they thought Ringo was a little better, but... I don't know. You didn't know that story?
I didn't know it.
Yeah, it's a true story.
Yeah. I didn't know that either.
All right, I made it up. It's
okay.
Not true.
Well, Lisa, you've chosen Drive My Car by the Beatles to commemorate your meeting with Maka. Do us the honor and introduce the song.
George Harrison was inspired by Otis Redding's Respect. This was before Aretha's version. And he encouraged Maka to play a lot of bass. And Maka actually plays slide guitar and piano on this tune. Ringo plays cowbell, Lennon plays tambourine, and the catchiest lyrics in the world. Drive My Car.
Asked the girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I want to be famous, a star on the screen. But you can do something in between. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. It's all very fine, but I can't show you a better time. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car, and maybe I'll love you. Beep, 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 beep,
was Drive My Car off the greatest Beatles album ever, Rubber Soul, in 1965. Well, we got time for one more song in our first half, also from 65, and this is one of Lisa's favorites. It's going to be We Gotta Get Out of This Place by the Animals. Why don't you introduce it, Lise?
So Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil, a married couple, wrote this tune. They weren't particularly happy with the way the Animals did it. It was a very popular song during the Vietnam era. A lot of people related to this feeling of get me somewhere else. Chas Chandler was a bass player, and I love the beginning. It's like you hear a lot of cymbal, you hear a lot of bass before you hear Eric Burdon come in with his sandpapery voice. Grand Funk, Alice Cooper, Blue Oyster Cult, The Crying Shames, you name it, they covered it. Even the Partridge Family, weirdly enough, in 1972.
We're not going to hear that version, hopefully.
No, the version we're going to hear is We Gotta Get Out of This Place by the Animals.
In this dirty old part of the city, where the sun refused to shine, people tell me there ain't no use in trying. Now, my girl, you're so young and pretty, and one thing I know is true. You'll be dead before your time is due, I know.
were so young and pretty. And one thing I know is true, yeah, you'll be dead before your time is due. Know it. Watch my dad.
By the way, that was the U.S. version of the song. There's a U.K. version, which actually I prefer, but I couldn't find it. So, well, as was the case with many British invasion bands, their hit songs sometimes featured slightly different versions depending on the country of release. And albums also featured a different lineup of songs. Stay tuned for part two of that classic rock show, broadcasting on WHRU-LP 101.5 FM and on demand 24/7.